This is Audible.
Audible Inc. presents Code Orange, written by Carolyn B. Cooney, narrated by Jeremy Beck.
Chapter 1. On Friday, Mr. Lynch walked around the classroom, making sure everybody had written down the due date in their assignment books. Luckily, he started at the far side, giving Mitty Blake time to whisper to his best friend, "Due date for what?" "Notes for the term paper," whispered Derek. "The one you've been working on for 4 weeks?" Mitty hadn't even chosen a topic yet. But Mr. Lynch had been teaching for years. He had encountered many Mitties. So although the paper itself didn't have to be turned in until February 18, on this coming Monday, February 2, each student in advanced biology had to submit an outline, 10 pages of notes, and a bibliography, including 4 physical books. "Books?" said Mitty, stunned. He was sure this had not been mentioned before. "Mr. Lynch, nobody uses books anymore. They're useless, especially in science. Facts change too fast." "Books," repeated Mr. Lynch. "This is to prevent you people from doing 100% of your research online." Mitty had done 0% anywhere, but he had certainly planned, insofar as Mitty had plans, which he didn't, to do his research online. So he said, "Mr. Lynch, an actual book is out of date before it gets printed. Anyway, a good scientist does laboratory research." "We did laboratory research last fall, Mitty," said Mr. Lynch. "I don't recall that you threw yourself into your project. I recall that you received a passing grade only through the efforts of the rest of your team. A scientist, Mitty, has to be able to dig through the published research of others. A scientist has to grasp the background and history of things. That means books." Mitty was willing to grasp the background and history of rock music. On a slow day, he could listen to Nirvana or Pearl Jam. But the background and history of disease? Because that was the depressing topic of this assignment. Infectious disease. "Each of you," Mr. Lynch had said, so many weeks ago that Mitty could barely remember it, "will choose an infectious disease of plants, animals, or humans. You will study the disease in history and its ancient treatments, or lack of them. If the disease has a specific history for us here in New York City, for example, during the yellow fever epidemics of the 1700s, people sometimes died at the rate of 300 per city block per day. You will cover that. Other sections of your paper? Description and course of the disease, current treatments and ongoing research. Finally, if your disease has an application in bioterrorism, you will cover that also." Even Mitty had awakened briefly to the exciting possibility of bioterrorism. Derek, of course, had wanted to be an exception to the rules. "Can we research bioterrorism only? I want to do anthrax, but specifically Attilie Lundgren, the 94-year-old woman who died of anthrax in 2001 when she opened her mail. She's FBI case number 184. It's impossible for me to use books. No book has been written about her yet. All my research has to be online." Derek warmed to a favorite topic. "I can solve her mystery. I believe everything is online now, every clue I need, and I can nail her murderer." "I would be proud of you," Mr. Lynch had said, without sarcasm. "And you may focus on Attilie Lundgren, but all that will do is make your paper longer. You still have to include everything I described, and you still must have 4 books. Remember, class, that I, too, know how to use Amazon.com. I, too, can pull up a title that looks useful and stick it in a bibliography without actually reading the book. I, too, can open up the free first chapter and find something to put in my notes. I will know if you actually read a book or if you are cheating." Mr. Lynch was one of the few teachers who admitted that even here at St. Raphael's, a Manhattan prep school for the rich and or brilliant, Mitty fell into the first category, there was such a thing as cheating. Other teachers skirted this possibility as if it were anthrax-laced mail. Right away, rare, cool African diseases like Ebola and Lassa fever had been chosen by eager students. Two other kids also wanted anthrax, but promised not to invade Derek's territory by mentioning Attili Lundgren. As the days went by, people began discussing their topics with excitement, as if they were genuinely interested. One girl had been allowed to choose immunization. Does it or does it not cause autism? Mitty would get autism just thinking about that. Another girl really did pick a plant disease and was deep into corn blight. Olivia, whom Mitty adored, had chosen typhoid fever and was already so advanced in her research that she was using the library of Columbia University's medical school, because every other library in New York City was too limited. Mitty hadn't been inside any library in the city of New York. As soon as Mr. Lynch finished ranting, Mitty slumped down in his seat. He had perfected the technique of listening to music on his iPod while a teacher talked. It was easy if he wore long sleeves. He kept the iPod in its armband and ran the cord down his arm and into his hand. Cupping the earpiece in his palm, he would rest his head on the same hand and listen to his music. His eyes stayed fixed on his teachers, who tended to be fond of him because he seemed so interested. Mitty's main interest was music. His life plan was to become a rock concert reviewer, the world's best job, and to prepare for this career, he had to buy, listen to, and memorize everything out there. He really didn't have time for term papers. He certainly didn't have time for books. Mr. Lynch extended his hand for Mitty's assignment calendar. Every fall, St. Raphael's handed these out. There were people who filled them in. Mitty was not one of them. He usually tossed his calendar in the garbage in September, because he wouldn't be making any entries. It was kind of amazing that the thing was still in his backpack, but then Mitty mainly used his backpack to carry snacks and hardly ever examined the debris at the bottom. With a degree of pride, he held out the February page on which he had just scribbled the right words. No other teacher in the entire school has given you a single assignment for February of 2004? Asked Mr. Lynch, handing the calendar back. Mitty made it a policy not to answer dangerous questions, so he just smiled in a friendly fashion. Persons, said Mr. Lynch, looking hard at Mitty, having a low quiz average who do not hand in their 10 pages of notes on Monday will be transferred out of this section and into a regular biology class. This was not a threat biology-wise, because Mitty certainly didn't care what or even if he learned. But if he got transferred, he would no longer be in a class with Olivia Clark. Olivia was the pinnacle of studious activity. When Olivia faced an exam, she divided her efforts carefully over the correct number of evenings. She never slacked off and never lost focus. She was light years ahead of everybody. Olivia had been nagging him to start his biology paper, which, because this was advanced biology, was supposed to be an advanced paper as well. Mitty didn't deserve to be in anything advanced. He was in this class only because his father and mother had put pressure on the school, since their life plan for him involved a brilliant high school career, an awesome college acceptance, and then medical school. They attributed his academic slump to attention deficit disorder, laziness, hormones, and bad teachers. None of these had anything to do with it. Mitty just had other plans. The moment school ended, Mitty bounded out of St. Raphael's and looked for his parents, who would be waiting in the car, motor idling, his father itching to accelerate. Mitty leaped into the back seat, slammed the door, and forgot the whole concept of assignments. Every weekend, the Blakes went to their place in the country. When you lived in Manhattan, the country was anywhere more than 20 miles from downtown. This particular weekend was perfect. It wasn't until Sunday afternoon, February 1, 2004, at about 4 o'clock that he remembered homework, because he was thinking of Olivia. She was unquestionably at her desk in New York, sitting between towers of books, her long, thin fingers racing over the keyboard of her laptop, her long, dark hair falling around her shoulders. Mitty moaned. He too should be writing. Where was he supposed to get books at 4 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon? Connecticut had assets, Not only did Mitty have a huge bedroom with several closets, a basement full of tools, and a media room full of DVDs, but he even had his own side of the garage, his own basketball hoop, his own creek for fishing, his own bikes and ATV. Still, at times like this, Connecticut had only drawbacks. In New York City, Mitty just walked out the door and everything was right there. Every conceivable store and restaurant. And on the sidewalk, Mitty's favorite shopping area, he could pick up sunglasses, watches, and baseball caps to replace the ones he had almost certainly lost during the week. And not only was everything right there, everything was always open. Just to test this, Mitty and his dad would sometimes get a hot dog, sushi, or a toothbrush at 3 a.m. If he were in the city, he'd just cross the street and head down the block to a huge Barnes & Noble. In the science and medicine section, he'd copy bibliography material, scribble enough sentences to keep Mr. Lynch happy, and then take the escalator to the cafe on the top floor, buy a pastry, and watch people reading magazines. A more pleasant hobby than actually reading a magazine himself. But Mitty was not in New York. The country didn't even have bookstores, unless you had time to drive for miles, and Mitty didn't drive yet. He could ask his parents to take him, but then he'd have to admit he had not yet started a project due in 16 hours. They wouldn't understand that 16 hours was plenty of time. Subtract 8 for sleep, or 10, which was more like Mitty on a weekend, and that left 8 or else 6 hours, and anybody could take a page or two of notes per hour, if they had books to take notes from. If only his family had stayed in the city this weekend. Of course, if they had, Mitty still wouldn't have been working on his paper. He'd have been hanging out with Derek, or else with Olivia. They didn't do well together. They were separate activities. And if he'd been in New York, Mitty would have been completely distracted by the city in winter, when everything good happened. The best concerts and bands, the best basketball and hockey, the biggest Christmas tree and the brightest lights. He and Derek would have gone to Madison Square Garden. He and Olivia, well, actually, he and Olivia had not yet done anything on their own. He liked her so much he needed lots of other people around to dilute how much he liked her. If he wanted to stay in the advanced class with her, he'd better get launched. He didn't rush into it. First, he put on a CD of his current favorite rock band, Widespread Panic. He had heard them live last year at the Beacon Theater. His apartment was close to Lincoln Center, so his parents could easily attend the symphony, opera, and ballet. This excellent location was also close to a venue for real music, the Beacon, whose only drawback was being so close to home that Mitty couldn't take the subway. Mitty loved the subway. If Mitty ever had extra money, he gave it to subway performers. He loved those guys. He loved the really bad sax player and the touchingly hopeful string quartet. He loved the gospel singers and the trumpeters, the mimes, and the guy who painted himself silver and pretended to be a statue. Mitty always dropped money in their cups. Every time he heard a subway musician, he looked forward to the day when he, too, could concentrate on music and not worry about class. Books, thought Mitty, frowning, and a faint book-type thought penetrated his mind. He turned down the volume on his music in order to process the thought. Mitty's mother was an interior decorator with a peculiar specialty, creating libraries for people who did not read. These clients turned to Kathleen Blake to provide a warm, rich, British-looking room full of leather, antique maps, dark velvet, and books with gold page edges. Mrs. Blake scoured New York, New Jersey, and New England for leather-bound sets of dead English authors. Content didn't matter, because nobody would ever read them. The books just had to have terrific bindings. The week before, she'd bought out the library of some very old, and finally dead, doctor in Wallingford. It had taken 2 trips in her van to bring back the guy's hundreds of books. Mitty had unpacked for her. He didn't read if he could avoid it, but when words were directly in front of your face, you couldn't help deciphering them. Hadn't some of the doctor's books been about infectious disease? Dragging his backpack, which held his laptop, Mitty went down a flight of stairs, crossed the center hall, and entered his mother's book room. A nice enough place if you liked books, but Mitty didn't. From across the room, he spotted Principles of Contagious Disease, Conditions of Infectious Disease, Infectious Illness, Treatment and Containment, and A History of Immunology. The books were thick and dusty. Mitty picked up Principles of Contagious Disease because the leather was soft and gold, like melted butter. He opened to the title page and, remembering he had to have a bibliography, turned one more. The book had been printed in Boston in 1899. What had anybody known about biology in 1899? Nothing. Every word in this book would be meaningless. Science-wise, 1899 was a joke. He'd be better off to hit the Barnes and Noble when they got back to the city, buy up everything they carried about infectious disease, pull an all-nighter and fulfill Mr. Lynch's requirements by dawn. Or not fulfill them. Whatever. Mitty began to shrug about the paper, as he had shrugged about everything academic this year. But if he failed out of advanced biology, his father would go berserk, and his mother would throw things. He might even get calls from his sister in grad school. Do you realize how you're hurting mother? Plus, there was Olivia's comment a few weeks ago, when he admitted he'd lost the technique of even hearing school. He'd glance around and find that the whole school day was over, and he couldn't remember what he'd been thinking about all day, or even if he'd been thinking. Olivia said, without joking, "Maybe it's very early Alzheimer's." Mitty didn't expect to be loved for his brain, but he didn't want to be discarded for his total lack of brain either. So he did not put Principles of Contagious Disease back. He sat, cross-legged, on the bare wood floor and leafed through the book. Flipping pages prior to reading took away some of the sting. First, choose a disease, he told himself. Faintly, he heard the sound of television and knew that his parents were watching something together. Since they had no television tastes in common, one of them was sacrificing for the other. Mitty would rather watch anything, even figure skating, than research an infectious disease he hadn't chosen yet in a book with no useful facts, so he considered heading for the media room. His fingers felt a raised place in the book. Not a lump, just a thicker area. Mitty turned pages, expecting a folded chart. It was an envelope. The envelope was rectangular, an odd size, maybe 6 inches long and 2 inches wide. It was mustard yellow, its color preserved by the darkness inside the book. It was labeled on one side. With a fountain pen, someone had written, "Scabs, VM Epidemic, 1902, Boston." The envelope was not, and never had been, sealed. It was closed with a thin string wound around a stiff paper button. Mitty undid the string and peered in. But the opening was narrow, and he couldn't see exactly what was down there. He inverted the envelope over his hand and tapped. The contents slid into his palm. The stuff really was scabs. When he was learning to rollerblade and skateboard, New York City, being sidewalk heaven, was perfect for these skills. He was always falling and scraping open his elbows and knees. His mother was always begging him to wear safety pads or else stop dangerous activities altogether, and he was always paying no attention. He never used Band-Aids. It was not until his cuts scabbed over that he could be bothered to notice them at all. There was something about a scab that demanded picking. When he was about 8, Mitty had had almost a full-time hobby of ripping scabs off before the cuts healed, so they had to scab over again. Mitty rubbed one dark crust of old blood between his fingers. It crumbled. Mitty sneezed. The energy of his sneeze made his fingers tighten around the remaining crusts. When he released his grip, only one scab remained intact. It was darker than the rest, almost black. He dropped the crumbles back in the envelope, dusted his hands briskly, and held the dark scab between the thumb and forefinger of his right hand. His nose itched. Mitty rubbed his nose with the back of his hand to prevent a second sneeze. The pages of the book began to turn of their own accord, wanting to close. Mitty had not read the page where the envelope had been resting. He sniffed the scab. It seemed to have a slight odor, but perhaps that was just the scent of age. It was truly weird to save your scabs. Even Mitty, who rather prided himself on being weird, had never saved a scab. But probably it wasn't the wounded person saving his own scabs. Probably it was some doctor who had once owned this textbook, saving scabs off somebody else's body. Talk about sick. It was also puzzling. What infectious disease bled? What wound would this scab be from? Mitty was not familiar with VM, but it occurred to him that if VM could cause an epidemic, it had to be an infectious disease. Mitty brightened. He didn't care if VM had a common name, a long history, or a current event. He didn't care if it had ever shown up in New York City or could be used by bioterrorists. He cared only that he had his topic. A 102-year-old scab could be used as show and tell, although that was kind of a second-grade phrase. For high school, Mitty would call this an artifact, a tiny mummified body part, if a scab could be called a body part. Nobody else would come up with that for their report. He had to figure out what VM stood for. VD, he knew, venereal disease. He hoped that was not what VM was, because he didn't like thinking about sexually transmitted diseases and didn't want to be known as the guy who researched them. Next, he tried to remember the true names of shots you got when you were little. They had just had a class on it, but Mitty had not been listening. OPV was oral polio vaccine. DPT was diphtheria, pertussis, and tetanus. No VM in that group. Mitty had a brainstorm and turned to the index. There weren't many entries under V, and only one VM. Variola major, which, wonderfully, had an entire chapter to itself.
Mitty!
Yelled his father.
Here!
Mitty shouted back.
Your mother wants to leave now!
Yelled his father. There were clues in this shout. His father did not want to leave now. He did not want to leave so much that instead of saying Mom wants, he was assigning Mom to Mitty. She had become that grim person, your mother. Mitty knew that on the drive home, his job was to be on both sides of whatever this issue was. Roxbury was 90 miles northeast of New York City, and since Dave Blake had always yearned to be a NASCAR driver, they'd get back to the city fast, long before Barnes & Noble closed. Mitty could get new books. He had never pulled an all-nighter, since his commitment to study rarely lasted longer than 10 minutes. But he liked the idea of an all-nighter. Olivia routinely stayed up all night studying, even when she'd been studying for weeks in a row already. Now he could boast that he, too, had worked through the night. He dropped the scab into the envelope with the crumbles, stuck the envelope back in the book without rewinding the string, and threw the book into his book bag. Then, since it was remotely possible that BNN would fail him, he threw in the other three ancient books. They were all worthless, but Mr. Lynch had just specified 4 books. He hadn't said they had to be worth anything. Mitty and his father waited patiently while Mitty's mom skittered around the house, checking things nobody else cared about, like leftover milk. At last, she was in the car, and Mitty's dad took off. Mitty meant to read up on VM, but he fell asleep instead. Variola major is a virus. A virus is not precisely a living creature. It has no system for the intake of food or oxygen. It has no personality. No brain. It has one task, to take over the cells of other creatures. Scab particles were in Mitty Blake's fingerprints. He had wiped them on his cheek and rubbed them against his nose. He had breathed them in. Every virus, although not quite alive, nevertheless has a shelf life. The shelf life of some viruses is known. The shelf life of others is uncertain. In this case, it was the shelf life of Mitchell John Blake that was uncertain. Chapter 2.
Have a nice nap, darling,
asked his mother, reaching over the front seat to ruffle her son's hair. Mitty stretched happily. He could lie down anytime, anywhere, and sleep soundly for 10 hours, 12 even. People could sit on him and watch television, have arguments, and clean up after a sick dog, and Mitty would never know. His dad handed over the car keys to the parking attendant while Mitty grabbed his backpack. It was amazingly heavy. What did he have in there? Tire irons? He opened the bag. What had been his logic, wasting space on 4 pathetic... He had not checked before tossing the books in. There at the bottom, splayed open, in fact crushed, was his classroom copy of Beowulf. Mitty recalled now that there would be a test on Beowulf in the morning. He could not believe this was happening. After he had planned so carefully, there would have been plenty of time to get to the bookstore, take notes. Naturally, he hadn't read Beowulf yet. He had a dim recollection that they had been talking about Beowulf in class. At least other people had been talking. Certainly Mitty himself had contributed nothing. And he recalled also that it was hard to read, being in some antique, dusty form of English. Or maybe Greek. Mitty? His mother said gently, because he had forgotten to get out of the car. His parents were partial to huge canvas bags made by L.L. Bean, and when they traveled between the city and the country, these were filled to overflowing with groceries, laundry, and extra sweaters. Since Mitty loved anything involving muscle power, he was always ready to lug and carry. He slung a bean bag over each shoulder, hoisted one in each hand, and also managed his backpack. The driveway up from the public parking lot under their apartment building was steep. Mitty loved steep. He liked the tightening of his leg muscles when he was walking uphill. He passed their building's tiny front garden and said hi to Carlos, the doorman on duty. Mitty's building had doormen and a concierge at the front desk 24/7. Days and evenings, the back service entrance was also manned. This was where packages arrived, dry cleaning or takeout was delivered, and moving men schlepped furniture. A doorman helped with strollers and shopping bags, carried luggage, gave an arm to old people struggling to get out of cars, closed up wheelchairs, gave directions, and above all, remembered faces. Nobody could wander in. Guests had to stop at the desk, where the concierge would telephone your apartment, on the house line, and say, "Derek's here?" And you'd say, "Send him up." And then Derek could walk around to the elevators. But since the staff did remember faces, pretty soon, when Derek came, they knew him and just waved him up. While his father picked up the mail, Mitty's mother chatted with Eve at the front desk to see if anything interesting had happened since Friday when they had hauled out of town, but nothing had. At last, the three of them were in the elevator, headed for the 8th floor. Their hall was nondescript. Nobody painted or decorated or hung anything or had wreaths or welcome mats. Nobody's taste was visible. And yet, the building never felt musty or unused the way their country house did after a week away. In the apartment building, you could always smell somebody's perfume or dog or dinner, and in the hall you could hear their television or their arguments. The minute you got inside your own apartment, though, no sound or vibration of neighbors was there with you. You were separate, yet surrounded. Mitty loved his building. "Mitty, honey, help me unpack the bags," said his mother. In a million years, Mitty would never understand why she brought groceries back and forth. Especially now, trapped between Beowulf and infectious disease, he did not want to get involved with leftover lettuce. He started to tell his mother he was busy, but she was smiling at him with such affection that he smiled back. "Sure," he said cheerfully, and used up another precious 10 minutes. Then he had to spend a while looking out the window. Considering how low they were, just the 8th floor, they had a great view. North, up Amsterdam, where it crossed Broadway. Both avenues were clogged with vans and trucks and buses and taxis. When the lights changed, even on this icy February evening, people poured across the street with their little tots zipped up under the plastic covers of their strollers, with their dogs and shopping carts, their briefcases and their bags and bags and bags of groceries. Mitty admired a bicycle delivery guy narrowly escaping death as he crossed streets against traffic while balancing pizzas. New Yorkers were strong because they carried everything a suburbanite would drop in the back seat of his car. They were strong because they got so much more exercise. Their lives were full of sidewalks, stairs, and detours. They were always running to grab a taxi, racing to catch a train, and threading through crowds while carrying what they needed, lacking a car to toss it in. Mitty's family pretty much only used the car to go to the country. In town, it was a time-consuming pain just getting the car out of the underground lot, never mind fighting city traffic, but finding a parking space close enough to their destination so that there was any point in taking the car to start with was the real obstacle. His father closed the door to his study, probably returning business calls or else ordering food. Mitty's dad loved delivery. There was nothing he would not have delivered. He certainly wouldn't walk across the street for books. He'd have Barnes & Noble deliver. And his mother closed the door to their bedroom, preparing for a shower. She took a mysteriously high number of showers, like Mitty with naps. Mitty got the Blockbuster card from the little stack of family use cards on the kitchen counter. The Metropolitan Museum card, the Public Library card, the Museum of Natural History card. Left the apartment, decided to take the stairs, pounded down 8 flights as fast as a fugitive, or so he told himself, went out the back way, jogged around the corner, and lucked out. They had the movie.
"Dude," said the movie guy, checking out Beowulf, "is this for school?"
"Yes," said Mitty. "Why else would he look at it?"
"Dude, you are so going to flunk your test," said the movie guy. "It does have a monster named Grendel, but nothing else matches. You gotta read the book."
Mitty was awestruck. "You read the book?"
"A decade ago."
"You passed the test?"
"I'm working at Blockbuster. What's your guess?"
Mitty was still laughing when he got back to the apartment. He laughed until his cell phone rang. "You do your algebra yet?" asked Derek. Of course he hadn't done his algebra yet. Weekends were for rest. Anybody knew that. Mitty was actually doing fairly well in math, so now he faced another question. Should he do his math first, thus maintaining a decent standing in one class anyway, or try to accomplish something in Beowulf, or something on his biology paper, maybe lifting himself to a passing grade in those classes, but risking failure in the one subject in which he was okay? Mitty felt that watching the movie was a good response to this dilemma. Having fallen asleep in the first few minutes of Beowulf, Mitty got up the following morning telling himself it was better to have had a good night's rest and be fortified with a hearty breakfast than to have actually done any homework. He looked in on his parents, who rarely went to bed before midnight or 1, and rarely got up before 9. Mitty had been on his own in the morning ever since he could remember. He was always surprised and touched by the sight of his parents asleep. He couldn't look at them very long or he would get a stab in his heart, as if these unconscious people needed him in some way he would never discover. Mitty left the apartment silently, locked the door behind him, grabbed an elevator, and went out the back. The high buildings of the west side created canyons of slashing wind. Even Mitty, who liked the cold, braced himself against the February blast. He passed any number of diners, delis, sidewalk coffee vendors, coffee shops, corner groceries, and bakeries, considering each one carefully. He was on the lookout for breakfast, and the decision was difficult. Should he go the chewy route, bagel? And if so, what flavor? Or should he go with soft and sweet, croissant, Danish? Or have a fried egg and bacon on a roll? He ended up with 2 Krispy Kreme original donuts, which he ate walking the remaining 9 blocks to school, where he lucked out. In English, there was a sub. No Beowulf exam. Instead, they were sent to the library. Mitty grabbed a computer screen and went to Google. He meant to research Variola major, since it was now his topic. But even though he knew what the result would be, he typed in virus. This brought up 2.5 million hits. Virus bulletins. Antivirus advice and instructions for fighting off viruses. Of course, these hits were for computer viruses, but who cared? When he got bored, Mitty did a search for Variola major and was guided to the CDC site. This was a nice coincidence, because he remembered now the CDC was supposed to be his first move anyway. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta, Georgia, has the premier site for reliable information for all of you except Melanie, who's doing plant disease, Mr. Lynch had said. Mitty scrolled around. Variola major turned out to be smallpox, a disease Mitty had vaguely heard of. It was medieval or something, like the Black Plague. It turned out that nobody got smallpox anymore. It had been destroyed decades ago. The CDC actually said, "Surveillance for a disease that does not currently exist anywhere in the world presents unique challenges." Surveillance for a disease that didn't exist sounded like something from a TV exposé. "What do you do for a living?" "Oh, I get a huge salary from your tax dollars to oversee a disease that doesn't exist." Mitty did a news search to see what was up in the smallpox world. He found very little, which was reasonable, considering it didn't exist. He did locate a case of monkeypox in Wisconsin. Some people had bought a prairie dog for a pet, but it had spent time in the company of a Gambian giant rat from Africa, and the rat had a bad case of monkeypox, which the prairie dog caught and gave to one of its owners. Mitty felt that anybody nuts enough to have a prairie dog for a pet should not be surprised when they got diseases. He looked up monkeypox to see what rats in Gambia were up to that they were coming down with monkey diseases. He was enchanted to find that just about any creature could have its own personal pox. There was skunk pox, pig pox, and camel pox, parrot pox, dolphin pox, and croc pox. There was even mosquito pox. Mitty was pretty sure that pox were spots. So exactly how did you spot spots on a mosquito's complexion? You'd have to have a seriously powerful microscope. The paragraph went on to explain that since bugs don't have skin, they also don't get a rash. Instead, the bug goes insane. Right away, Mitty had a new life plan. He would study insanity in insects. It seemed like a big field, probably without much competition because there would be so few paying patients. When Mitty arrived in the school lunchroom, he was in an excellent mood, buoyed by thoughts of mosquito insanity. He sat with Derek and Olivia. He and Derek congratulated each other that they'd had a sub in English. Olivia would have the same sub when she went to English, which for her was the last period of the school day. "Are you telling me neither one of you has read Beowulf yet?" said Olivia, frowning. "It's very short," she said, implying that anybody could read it, even Mitty or Derek. Mitty responded with pleasure, thinking how pretty she looked with that little crease of concern across her forehead. Derek responded with loathing, thinking how repellent she looked with that little crease of superiority across her forehead. Mitty avoided suggestions that he ought to be reading, so he said, "How are you coming with typhoid?" Olivia smiled back, which was one of her best points. She never clung to an annoying subject the way Mitty's mother and sister did. "I'm finding so much on the history of typhoid, and it's so exciting," she said, eyes sparkling with research joy. "I'm hoping Mr. Lynch will give me permission just to do typhoid history and not bother with current events and treatment. You see, I found out about a woman named Mary Mallon who was responsible for infecting 47 people with typhoid right here in New York City in the early 1900s. She was a cook, and everybody she cooked for got typhoid because she handled their food. Eventually, she was known all over America for infecting people, so they called her Typhoid Mary. When the authorities finally caught her, since she was just a carrier and had never gotten sick herself, she refused to believe she was a problem, and she refused to stop being a cook. So they locked her away in a prison on an island in the East River. What I want to do, Mitty, is visit that island. It's a bird sanctuary now. Want to come?" Naturally, Mitty wanted to invade a bird sanctuary in the Bronx in February in icy weather. Boats probably weren't allowed to dock at a bird sanctuary even in July, and the likelihood of finding a captain willing to sail through ice floes was low, and he and Olivia did not qualify as high-level bird watchers deserving of such a treat, and furthermore, Typhoid Mary probably hadn't left any traces. But so what? "I'm on," said Mitty. "What's the island?" "North Brother," said Olivia excitedly. Mitty had never heard of it, but there was a surprisingly high number of islets around Manhattan. Liberty, Ellis, and Rikers were the famous ones.
I haven't figured out how to get there yet, said Olivia worriedly.
I have complete faith in you, said Mitty, who did. He and Olivia had sat next to each other in two classes the year before, and he had not noticed her. This year, they were in one class together, and he noticed her every moment and thought about her every day, sometimes every hour. Mitty had mixed feelings about this. The reason he hadn't asked her out was that half his life was already spent thinking about her, and he wasn't sure about handing over the other half as well. Derek disliked topics that did not include him, so he said, I, meanwhile, am trying to figure out the motive of the murderer of Ottilie Lundgren. Olivia turned her frown of concern upon Derek. It was established that the person or persons who mailed that anthrax did not have individual victims in mind. Those deaths were random accidents. They were random murders, Derek corrected her. I need to know the guy's motivation or I won't find him. See, normal people aren't killers. Normal people don't murder at all, let alone fly planes into occupied buildings or strap bombs to their chests and detonate themselves in pizza parlors. You have to be very hate-filled or very brainwashed to do those things, like, say, Muhammad Atta flying into the Twin Towers. On the other hand, Atta was crazy but had guts, whereas pouring dust into an envelope doesn't take guts. It's a weak act, so I'm looking for a weak person. Mitty vaguely recalled pouring dust into an envelope of his own. Did you know that Ottilie Lundgren liked to read mystery novels? Asked Derek. What do you suppose it was like for her to lie in the hospital, and she's 94 years old, and all of a sudden she realizes she's the murder victim? Mitty finished his carton of chocolate milk, fortifying himself because in about a minute he was going to be kicked out of advanced biology in front of everybody. I still don't see how you find the guy on the internet, Derek. Google claims to have more than 4 billion web pages. There's got to be one where that murderer checks in. Because what's the point if you don't brag? What's the point if you don't get credit? You think it was one person, not a conspiracy? Asked Mitty. Derek nodded. A single evil person. In New York, the word evil made everybody tense, just like the word terrorist. Everybody knew what the words meant, and nobody liked to use them. New Yorkers wanted total protection against evil and against terrorists, but no New Yorker wanted to admit that either one existed. But every person who had seen the towers collapse and heard the recorded voices of those about to die making their final phone calls to someone they loved knew about evil. New York was a big town. At some point, Mitty must literally have crossed paths with evil, but he hadn't noticed. That was the scariest part of the anthrax killer. He was still out there, leading the same old life in the same old place, with the same old colleagues, keeping his evil safe. I believe in evil, said Olivia. We lived in Battery Park, you know. My mother stood at our window and watched as the Twin Towers came down. I was in school here, uptown, and when we were dismissed, I had to go to Zora's house and watch it on television. And I didn't know if my parents were all right until 8:46 that night. Every New Yorker knew these things to the minute. We could have gone back to our old apartment when they opened the streets downtown again, but my mother was too upset, so we moved here. Derek, who lived on the east side and took a crosstown bus to St. Raphael's, didn't care where Olivia lived, then or now. You pick a topic yet? He asked Mitty. Derek thought Mitty's collapse in school was funny. He followed Mitty's failures as he might follow a good comic strip. Smallpox, said Mitty firmly, as if he actually knew something about it. A true weapon of mass destruction, said Derek with approval. They tossed their lunch leftovers into the garbage and headed to biology. Olivia surged ahead, taking her usual chair in the first row so she could glue her eyes on Mr. Lynch. Mitty sank down in back and studied her hair and shoulders. There were other views of Olivia that were more rewarding, but he did love her hair. Mr. Lynch regarded the class with his usual half-like, half-dislike. So many of you complained that you didn't have time to get your preliminary work done that I'm giving you another 2 days. Outstanding, thought Mitty. In 48 hours, Mitty could probably bring down the government of some small country. He could certainly come up with 10 pages of notes and a bibliography, especially since he already had the books at home. He'd take 2.5 pages of notes per book and be done.
Wednesday, without fail, said Mr. Lynch, and I will accept no excuses. He then showed a video, which not surprisingly was about infectious disease. Mitty dozed in the pleasant dark of the classroom. Halfway through the film, he woke up to see a sneeze demonstration in a laboratory. Droplets, magnified and colored, sprayed from the patient's nose. In slow motion, these droplets smashed into the faces of people standing nearby, sailed over their shoulders and into the faces of the people behind them, landed on doorknobs, nestled on countertops, came to rest on forks and spoons. Droplet infection was the sort of thing a New Yorker was better off not thinking about, since every subway ride, every visit to Tower Records, every stop at a kiosk for a newspaper, every saunter through the park put you within sneeze range of some of New York's 8 million souls. Mitty Blake vaguely recalled a sneeze of his own in his mother's book room. Since Olivia had ballet on Mondays, Mitty couldn't hang out with her after school. He spent some time thinking of her in a black leotard, and then forced himself to go to the bookstore. To his surprise, there were two very current books on this very dead disease. The Demon in the Freezer, excellent title. Mitty was definitely starting with that. And Smallpox, The Fight to Eradicate a Global Scourge. Academic-looking, Mitty would read as little as possible. Walking home, Mitty checked in with his parents. The three of them generally IM'd or phoned each other several times a day, as if their lives had no meaning until they had reported in. His dad had an evening meeting and was staying at the office. This was nearly always the case, since he got started so late in the morning. His mother was taking clients to dinner. Mitty promised to eat a healthy meal, and so after a satisfying dinner of blue corn chips and sour cream, he headed into his bedroom, which was the same size as his closet in Connecticut. He slept on the top bunk and stored CDs, DVDs, T-shirts, sports equipment, his laptop, and really good souvenir programs from Madison Square Garden on the lower bunk. His printer and about 10 pairs of sneakers fit under the bunk bed. There was no space allocated for doing homework. He sat on the floor, his laptop on his lap, where it belonged, and used online encyclopedias, medical sites like the CDC and NIH, the National Institutes of Health, where hundreds of scientists worked on infectious disease, the Livermore National Laboratory, ditto, and his 6-book collection. Reading as fast as possible, he blended the sources in his mind. Mr. Lynch wanted notes, but Mitty decided to bypass that. Why do something twice? He'd go straight to his rough draft. Actually, it would be his final draft. Mitty never did anything over. Surrounded by a flurry of computer printouts, his books opened on the floor around him, he began to compose. Smallpox once covered the globe. In Europe alone, 400,000 people a year used to die from it. It used to be extremely infectious. Smallpox started with little brown dots on your skin, called macules. After a while, each little dot raised up into a bump, called a papule. 3 or 4 days later, each papule became a blister called a pustule, a hard, round bead under the skin. The patient's whole body was covered with these, but especially his face, hands, and feet. Sometimes the blisters ran together, so there was no regular skin between them, and the patient was completely covered with fever pellets. After several days, each pustule burst open and bled and scabbed over. It took a single pustule about 6 days to dry up, but it could take 2 or 3 weeks for all the blisters to dry up. Once it dried up, the scab fell off and left a hole where it had been. The pock. This was like a ditch in the skin. If you had 100 of those pits in your face, you could look so hideous that if you lived, you might decide to wear a mask in public for the rest of your life. Mitty got most of this from the old books, because the doctors who wrote those had seen smallpox, whereas nobody entering medicine today ever had or ever would. Mitty continued to write. The virus traveled in droplets from coughing or breathing and also got spread by contact from the hands of victims. When a patient first got infected, he didn't feel sick and he didn't have a rash. 12 to 14 days went by. The patient still didn't know there was anything wrong. For those 12 to 14 days, the patient was not infectious to other people. It was now 9 o'clock. Mitty still had to read Beowulf. He decided to get to the end of symptoms before he quit smallpox. When the patient started to feel sick, he felt really sick really fast. Right away, he had a high temperature, chills, rigor, terrible headaches, terrible backaches, pain in his legs and arms, plus a cough, not to mention the rash. Mitty did not know what rigor was. He considered checking his computer dictionary, but he was on a roll and couldn't be interrupted merely to find out what he was talking about. Pretty soon, the patient was so sick he was all but in a coma and maybe delirious. By then, he was so weak, he also had heart problems, bronchitis, and pneumonia. And all of that stuff was what really killed him. One of Mitty's antique sources had charted the suffering in smallpox. 90% of patients had severe headache, 84% had intense shivering, 54% had intense backache, nearly all had nausea, their tongues were covered with white fur, and their breath stank. When the pustules burst, out came thick yellow pus. Every patient itched unbearably. Good thing it no longer exists, thought Mitty. Well, symptoms were a wrap. Moving right along, Mitty picked up Demon in the Freezer in one hand and Beowulf in the other and weighed them. The poem didn't weigh as much. Beowulf, open to the crushed page, had Old English on the left and a modern translation on the right. Mitty read a few lines. Time and again, foul things attacked me, lurking and stalking. But I lashed out, gave as good as I got with my sword. My flesh was not for feasting on. There would be no monsters gnawing and gloating over their banquet at the bottom of the sea. How relaxing. He flipped around in Demon instead. The pustules began to touch one another, and finally they merged into confluent sheets that covered his body like a cobblestone street. The skin was torn away from its underlayers across much of his body, and the pustules on his face combined into a bubbled mass filled with fluid until the skin of his face essentially detached from its underlayers and became a bag surrounding the tissues of his head. Smallpox made Old English monsters seem rather tame. Mitty read on. Another patient had had hemorrhagic smallpox, where the skin didn't blister but stayed smooth, while inside him his organs exploded with smallpox instead. This variety was called blackpox because the person looked charred, like wood after a fire. If you got this type of smallpox, you always died. Blackpox, wrote the author, is more common in teenagers. Mitty frowned. How trustworthy was an author in 2002, the copyright date of Demon, if he thought smallpox still existed? Mitty did the first editing of his life. With his pen, he crossed out is and changed it to was. More than 24 hours had passed. To Mitty Blake, this had no meaning. But a virus uses every available moment to double and double again. Variola major enters a cell by fusing with its membrane. Once inside the cytoplasm, variola causes the cell to give up its own functions. Now the cell must dedicate itself to making variola. Within 8 hours of invasion, the process is fully launched. The host cell creates tens of thousands of viral copies, which ooze back out of the cell membrane. Every one will be infectious. Chapter 3. On Tuesday, February 3, 2004, an envelope filled with white powder was delivered to the United States Senate office building. Derek hoped it was his anthrax murderer trying again and could hardly stand it that he was forced to attend school in the midst of such important breaking news. But the powder turned out to be ricin. Ricin could kill, but it was a poison, not an infectious agent. Therefore, who cared? Certainly not the students gathered in the front hall before class began. People talked mostly of television shows and who was following Survivor or The Apprentice or American Idol. Olivia, of course, was not watching any of them.
After school, I'm going up to the library at Columbia Medical to work on my paper, Mitty. Want to come? The history of smallpox is very exciting, you know, especially the eradication brought about by Donald Henderson.
How do you know anything about smallpox? Derek demanded.
I looked it up, of course, said Olivia, as soon as I knew Mitty's topic.
It's his topic, Derek pointed out. Anyway, how are you getting into a university library? You don't have a Columbia ID.
I have my father's card. I hold it up, they figure I'm a medical student, and they wave me in. I've already been twice this month.
Your dad has a beard, Mitty said.
They never check photos. And if it looks as if they're going to, I put my thumb over the beard.
This was a whole new view of Olivia. Mitty himself loved getting around security. His parents wouldn't let him try this in airports, so he was limited to buildings in New York whose lobbies were public, but whose elevators were not. If he got caught, he just tried to look young and stupid, two skills Mitty never ran out of. All that ever happened was security officers told him to get lost.
Okay, so you can get in on your father's card, Mitty said to Olivia, but how do I get in? Same card. The library foyer is small and crowded, hordes of medical students and nursing students and researchers and who knows what. I show my card, play with my bootlaces or something, hand it to you, and we're both in.
What if we get caught? Asked Mitty, hoping they would. It would be so much more interesting than studying.
We won't get caught. We're dressed like medical students, which is to say badly, so we'll fit in. Librarians worry about people stealing rare books or maps, but there aren't any of those in the medical library. We'll be the only people in the whole library using books anyway. Everybody else will be using online journals.
Why aren't we using online journals?
Because we're going there to study history, said Olivia gently. And by definition, history is not current.
Derek couldn't stand it when Olivia talked like that. He stomped off. Mitty just enjoyed it. In English, he was gratified to see the sub again. He promised himself that tonight, he really would dig into Beowulf. He'd end up better off than the good students, because they'd read the poem long ago when it was due, but it would be fresh in Mitty's mind, and he would ace the test. The substitute teacher told them to work on anything they wanted. Actually, the sub told them to do anything they wanted, a dangerous suggestion, but this was a pretty quiet group, and they let it pass. Mitty decided it would do no actual harm to glance at a smallpox book again today. Naturally, he hadn't paid attention when he was throwing stuff into his book bag, and had neither of his new books, only a History of Immunology, published in 1909. Oh well. He could add more useless facts to his paper. On page 134, Mitty read, "It is practically certain that smallpox, like other acute infectious disorders, is caused by a living microorganism. Examination of the pustules, however, has failed to find anything bacterial which can be regarded as being responsible for the disease." Cool, thought Mitty. In 1909, they didn't know what a virus was. Wonder when they did. This led him to consider microscopes, and when the really advanced ones had been invented, and it occurred to him that online he could find an actual picture of an actual smallpox virus, print it out, and include it in his report. Exhausted from so much mental labor, Mitty turned on his iPod and listened to the Ain't Life Grand album. "Everybody Turns Hero Tonight," he sang silently. "You might," Mr. Lynch suggested to Advanced Biology, "help your grade by arranging an interview with a scientist or physician who specializes in your disease."